Go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, you can finish your sentence. I didn't really get what you were talking about. I was clear
what
it up.
What I'm saying is I could see that he's a composer and he appreciates composing music, but he was poking at the normal pop music and how people put it together as he saw it.
Yeah. He's also criticizing, satirizing those with big ambitions with their celebrityhood. You know, like we saw with Mick Jagger and the partner who just got off the road with him. Remember we talked about that? Sometimes I don't know what I've said compared to Tuesday. Are you guys there? Oh, did I? You get muted?
Yeah.
Fell off? No, you're not falling off.
No, because I think on the one side, all these rock stars thought they were great artists. But Frank Kulski, they were actually only in an ego trip, and they weren't there because of the money and the fame. And
they were uninformed.
Really
Frank knew a lot.
It was not really,
they didn't know anything.
Yeah, they,
Frank knew a lot, and these young kids, his competitors, didn't know anything other than music, but they weren't able to be a spokesman. So what's interesting, I've met different fans of Zappa and older people. They'd often say Frank was their hero, and he would get people saying that this early, 1966. So he was pretty impressive as a political entity.
Mm.
So let's see. So it's an abstraction of certain trends in pop music. Each song, so it's exactly McLuhan's definition of art that tries to create an effect. You know, tracing things backwards. But people were I don't know, a certain kind of person would notice that Frank was different. Now, I was a pretty big megalomaniac back then, so I probably didn't notice it. I didn't notice that Frank had this ability. I did notice that he could work for me, though. We have no response. What's wrong with you people?
We're listening to you. It's a revelation.
Yes.
So you were behind the CIA, Frank.
Yes, I was from one part of the CIA, and he was from another part. We didn't know which part. One left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. I mean, I arranged that meeting in June 67, a year after this, a year later. I can't say that I knew about this happening in 66. I got more back in touch with Frank in 67. And I just knew he was a guy that would be talented and you would want to sort of be associated with or have him be associated with you. So it's pretty interesting for me to read this early. He's making a big impact. I mean, they are getting written up. So he says, the mothers do it on their records, and one infers the delicatessen delegation on their rye bread. There's the bread of life. The mothers, one part explains that the free goes to practice free expression on an individual or collective basis. The mothers do it on their records, and one infers the delicatessen delegation on their rye. The delicatessen delegation on there, they do it on their rye bread, I guess they're trying to say. Those who obtain the album may do it by discarding the records and playing the cover, says the... So this is the main newspaper putting it down. Those who obtain the album may do it by discarding the records and playing the cover. And they end by quoting Frank, who's called the head mother. This is a rough beginning, the head mother said. Whether or not I believe I was meant to do it. There it is, the pro- prophetic inspiration. This is a rough beginning. Whether or not I believe I was meant to do it. He's not even admitting he believes in his own work. What do you think of that? Pretty McClellan-esque.
Yeah, he had this sense of destiny.
Yeah. Whether or not I believe I was meant to do it. Okay, so that's Mothers Invent Sounds Worse Than Music. So they probably get a lot of sales from that article because the people are smarter than the journalists. And they know, hey, this guy's different. We're going to hang out with him by getting his records. So now there's another. They take out a big page of the LA Free Press, and they put out the Freak Out, the official news of the mothers. And I've circled a couple of points, see what they say. And Frank and them organized this, paid for it, designed it. It's like the cover of the Freak Out magazine, and then sold to the Los Angeles Times, paid for it. What is it? They paid for it to be given a paid advertisement page. So it says on this page, probably written by Frank, look at this. It's a bit distorted, but it might be interesting what he's saying about them. Let's see. So it says, the Mothers of Invention, a talented but warped quintet. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, no, they're quoting an article from the Los Angeles Times within this paid advertisement. The Mothers of Invention, a talented but warped quintet, have authored an album poetically titled Freak Out, which could be the greatest stimulus to the aspirin industry since the income tax. The two-record set, which is selling for the price of one LP, is an attraction to teenagers, contains some potent satire, but the group often meanders into excesses of abstraction, blunting their numbers to pointlessness. What do you think of that? Any comments?
That's Frank.
Very good. That's
Frank.
You got to say something. You could be off. I could be disconnected. What are you saying?
No, could you repeat
satire,
that again?
Could I what?
Who's
read
talking?
It again?
Yeah, who's
a guy, a journalist named Pete Johnson.
Ah, okay.
Who's saying the mothers are talented but warped quintet. And if you listen to music, you will help the aspirin industry. You'll want aspirin, he says. This could be the greatest stimulus to the aspirin industry since the income tax. And it says it's an attraction. What? You laugh there?
Yes.
Okay. The two-record set, which is selling for the price of one LP as an attraction to teenagers, contains some potent satire, but the group often meanders into excesses of abstraction, blunting their numbers to pointlessness. Now, we love that music now. A lot of people do, but I guess it was odd for people back then. Freaking out is defined loosely as free expression inspired by casting off outmoded and restricted standards of thinking and etiquette. Sources of inspiration for the vocalist listed at length inside the album jacket. I don't know why they're saying that. These names are inspiration for the vocalist listed at length inside the album jacket include Salvador Dali, Brian Epstein, Jules Pfeiffer, James Joyce, Sacco and Vanzetti, J. Arthur Rank, Elvis Presley, and sundry other miscellaneous wellsprings. Then it says, lists off the songs. Okay, see. It says, all the songs are derivative of rock and roll, and one, Go Cry on Somebody Else's Shoulder, is a perfect satire of the archetypal woebegone teenage rhythm and blues ballad. The gibbering falsetto and bass accompaniments set an ideal background for inane lyrics about a boy but a boy giving his love, his high school ring, at the root beer stand, having his car reupholstered and his cockies pressed, but still being deserted by the girl. Then he talks about the song, Who Are the Brain Police? A free-form nightmare built from mechanical imagery. Who Are the Brain Police has the strangest instrumental break ever recorded. Unidentifiable noises superimposed on top of each other, including voices babbling indistinguishably. A bass electric guitar being tortured to death in what sounds like a factory steam whistle chorus. How do you like that? Do you like to get that kind of review?
And this is the ad that they posted in the Examiner?
Yes. These bad reviews, Zappa is putting in into the one-page ad, this full-page ad. He's celebrating, I guess, either the only reviews they got, and he had to show that they were a viable group, or he loves the misunderstanding of what he's doing.
Well, in the time where people were trying to rebel against the establishment, the bad critics were actually good.
Like, yes.
It appears that he planted that to get some attention.
Yeah, and he gets out these articles for us to read. Or I Xeroxed all these from microfiche up at the University of California in L.A., UCLA's library. It's been a week. I went through all the microfiche to find stuff.
When did you do that, Bob?
When Carolyn was doing her elective, I mentioned it many hours ago, at the UCLA Pain Control Clinic. The Pain Control Clinic. And some guy had gone over there after Nixon had opened it up and looked into acupuncture and was amazed. So he became famous opening the first alternative medicine kind of experimental university-supported lab. And Carolyn got a gig there, studying for her college degree, get it for an elective. She got the gig of observing what the stuff that they were using, observing it. Well, of course, she wows everybody, and then everybody wants her to learn their technique that they were doing in this place. So then she learns everything from everybody. So she has a great time, including she meets, she does medical acupuncture or something on Aldous Huxley's wife, Laura Huxley.
Wow.
So that's 1977. So she's getting the breakthroughs, getting early information, like Wyndham Lewis going around Europe in 1905. You know, doors are opening to him. Well, doors are opening here. And that's when I met Mary McLuhan at a Don Van Vliet painting gallery scene with Dave Worster. So the next part about this review says, there are a few tunes which sound as if they might be semi-serious rock and roll. I ain't got no heart, and how could I be such a fool, for instance. But most of the tunes are very experimental and are hard on the eardrums and the patience. What do you think of that? So I think I've looked at each one. There is this little article by Ralph Gleason who thought Frank was just an ad man infiltrating youth culture. He has an article on the Mothers and Lenny Bruce, and it just has the part about Lenny Bruce. Now, he's going to be dead in 2 weeks from the – well, we don't have a date for the paid advertisement, but let's assume it's the summer of 66, and I think Lenny Bruce dies in August 66. So here's another article. Do you mind me reading these? Do you find them interesting?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Right. So there's another journalist, Ronnie Oberman, who writes, doesn't say, but he has a column called Top Tunes, and he's on the East Coast. All right, so he writes, freaking out moved a bit closer to the East Coast earlier this week when the chief proponents of the movement, there's a movement to freak out, proponents of the movement swooped down on Washington, Washington City. What do you think of that? Freaking out is a movement. That's right at the sort of the end of the 50s aspect of the first part of the 60s. Now the second part of the 60s is going to burst forth, and all the kind of turmoil is going to happen. So you see the naivety, the sheltered sensory life of these journalists, right?
Yeah.
One-dimensional man, as Herbert Marcuse would say. So it says, the mother invention, a West Coast group with a liking for the unusual, both in music and dress, visited the Kirby Scott dance party on WCAA-TV, where they engaged in a happening in quotes, and then paid a surprise visit to Georgetown's Roundtable nightclub. And it quotes Frank, freaking out on a personal level is an individual expression. Freaking out on a personal level is an individual expressing himself as creatively as possible within his environmental framework. There he is using the word environment, explains the group spokesman and writer Frank Zappa. He's a writer. Our stuff is what I'd like to describe as free music. It takes elements from different sources. So the journalist says, Freak Out is the title of the group's initial album on Verve Records, and it's on the way to becoming one of the most controversial LPs of the year. It's a double album package, selling for the price of one, and features some of the wildest rock and roll ever. Frank says they preferred releasing an album before a single so that listeners could hear what a wide range of sounds they can come up with. One of the album's cuts, quote, How Could I Be Such a Fool, will probably be their first single. Baltimore-born Frank, he's the one with scraggly black hair, beard, and mustache, joined the group about 9 months ago when the other members, Ray Collins, Jim Black, Roy Estrada, and Ellie Ingber, put out a call for a guitarist. So that's, too bad we didn't know the date. So late 65, early 66 is the date when Frank's getting this attention, and the album hasn't even come out yet. He puts those who hang out there into several classifications, you know, like a PR ad agency, including teeny boppers or bubblegummers, young people who are getting out for the first time. Freaks, his band is included in this category. Those 16 to 20 years old who are in the mainstream of activities there, and swingers, the ones who still get their hair done with a razor cut and wear patent leather shoes and sport coats at night. So that's he's up against the swingers, and he's in the mainstream. And then he says, in the over 20 age group, he adds, there are a number of hippies or freaks. The freaks are known for their wild tastes in clothes and long hair. Frank is against the rigid stereotyped dances such as the swim, frog, and monkey, and I hate records that tell how to do such and such. The way kids dance in L.A. is very advanced socially, he says. It's completely improvised. I can vouch for that because when I was there in the summer of 66, I went to some dance parties, and I learned how to dance quite differently due to the new rhythms. Became a pretty wild dancer. Little did I know, it was just one person removed from Vito. I could have gotten the training, beat up Big Mike, and gone to New York and made it as a ballet dancer or something, or an usher or a canteen clerk or something. I would have made it. I tell you, I would have been really good at whatever I did. But fortunately, I didn't have to do anything. Let's see. So they put out a call for a guitarist 9 months ago. Frank, who has lived on the West Coast most of his 25 years, is somewhat, okay, if he's 25, that's 60, okay, that'd be 66, is somewhat of an expert on the happenings on Sunset Strip, where all the youth who want to be in are gathering these days. Where was it?
It's really interesting to see the complexity of that time, because before I thought it was just like hippies taking LSD.
Right.
But it was... that freak is quite kids. Interesting.
Yeah, so he says...
The freaks
Frank,
are very interesting.
What?
The freaks. I mean, there were not only the hippies. I didn't know it was like a movement.
Frank went on to say that the hippies were San Francisco and the freaks were L.A., and the difference was that the freaks cared about what they wore. They designed their costumes, whereas the hippies and McLuhan's were Calvinists. They didn't care how they didn't dress for aesthetic reasons. They dressed for uniformity reasons, whatever you want to call the Puritans, and... the hippies were kind of empty, not as sophisticated on the media as the freaks. They were just into simplicity. Get on a commune and get out of San Francisco. So Frank is against the rigid stereotype dances such as the swim, frog, and monkey, and I hate records that tell how to do such and such. The way kids dance in L.A. is very advanced socially, he says. It's completely improvised. Then he says, one of the most serious problems among youngsters on the coast is drugs, Frank says. I don't use any, and I've never encouraged it. Anyone who takes acid is taking his mind in his own hands. The same state of psychedelic happiness can be induced through dancing, listening to music, holding your breath, and spinning around, and any number of the old easy-to-perform and 100% legal means, all of which I endorse. Did you hear that? Talking about how you get a state of psychedelic happiness can be due through dancing, listening to music, holding your breath, and spinning around, and any number of the old easy to perform and 100% legal means, all of which I endorse, said Frank. Frank believes that much of what the group is trying to put across on records is explained in the following lyrics from one of their songs, Who Are the Brain Police? And here's the lyrics. What will you do if we let you go home and the plastic's all melted and so is the chrome? Who are the brain police? What will you do when the label comes off and the plastic's all melted and the chrome is soft? In brackets, insert instrumental interlude. What will you do if the people you knew were the plastic that melted and the chromium too? Who are the brain police? So what do you think of that one? Isn't that fun?
Yeah, I would like to ask you. Who are the brain police? What would you say?
I would have a very complex... I would say that my chart, Tiny Note chart, is a picture of the brain police. So you got every kind of theory embedded in there. The theory of artists anticipating technical problems. The theory that technology dominates an era. The theory that the magazine, the... athlete, the musician, the scientist have a common pattern underneath them. What else do we say about them? About anybody? Okay, so I'm building an army, okay? Get over it.
An army of freaks and boring.
Yes, and kooks with little green books. And they blow bicycles. Okay, so that was Ronnie Oberman. But Pete Johnson writes an article. And I started reading it, and we did Go Cry on Somebody's Shoulder, Archetypal Woe Be Gone, Teenage Rhythm and Blues Ballad. Okay, so next sentence. The gibbering falsetto and bass accompaniment set an ideal background for inane lyrics about a boy. Giving his love his high school ring at the root beer stand. So we did all that. Then it says, okay, so I read that guy, Pete Johnson. I read most of it. Okay, so then Here's another article. If You Get a Headache by Lorraine Alterman. I've heard of her. It says, mothers and fathers, you thought the Beatles were bad. You got up in arms about the Rolling Stones. Sonny and Cher made you cringe. Well, as the man said, you ain't seen nothing yet. How's that for predicting Ion, Roxy? Using our favorite phrase. Hey, what are you doing? Are you in the kitchen? You're too far away. Can't make out what you're saying.
No. I said, wait till you hear Bob.
Ah, right. The Mothers of Invention are here with an album called Freak Out. Someone suggested it should have been called Flake Out. They come from Hollywood. Their clothes are dreadful. And I dig mod clothes. Their hair and beards are filthy. They smell bad. You just can't believe it. This is the review Frank's getting. Endless abuse. Tuesday afternoon, the mothers appeared on Robin. Oh, what's this? On Robin. Okay, here it is. Tuesday afternoon, they appeared on Robin Seymour's TV show. As Art Cervi, Swinging Time talent coordinator, said, quote, we've never had anyone on the show that brought anything near the controversy they caused. The switchboard was flooded with viewers either saying the mothers were great or awful. Hey? What do you think of that? If you miss them Tuesday, you can see them Saturday on Dave Prince's Club 1270 TV show. Pity the poor WXYZ switchboard operators. Meanwhile, here's what lead mother Frank Zappa had to say. We play the new free music. Music is absolutely free, unencumbered by American cultural suppression. We are systematically trying to do away with the creative roadblocks that our helpful American education system has installed to make sure nothing creative leaks through to mass audiences. The same patriotic feeling expressed in songs like The Green Beret and Day of Decision are embodied in our every performance, only on a more abstract level. Blatant flag waving gets to be a little nauseating. We represent the only true patriotism left. Here's instructions on playing your album. First, you buy it. Second, you don't leave it on the backseat of the car so it melts. Third, take out disc two and play the last side first. Turn off all the lights and sit in front of the stereo with your head
in your head.
And my paper's stuck here. With your
searching, spinning.
Can't get the paper separate. Hear me scraping it? I'll get you close to the mic. Hear the thumb trying to separate the page. This is. I recommended this for Lumpy Gravy, but Frank wouldn't use it. We can't get the pages split. We need Carolyn.
What's your real theory about Frank being CIA?
No, he wasn't CIA. No way.
And what about Gail?
Well, Gail kept to herself. I hardly interacted with her at all. She was not a friendly person. I remember one time standing on Frank's front lawn on Woodrow Wilson Drive before he put the big fence up. This would be about March 1970. And I'm there asking him about his conceptual continuity and talking about certain things. And the whole time, Gail, who was attractive, was sitting there with her arms folded, staring at me with a frown, like very very pissed off about things. I don't know what she was up about. I don't know if she was very protective of Frank or didn't like anybody else around. But she came down when we were doing that, the Bob Marshall interview. After 45 minutes, she came down and said, okay, Frank, is that it? And Frank said, no, we're just getting started. So luckily, Frank wanted to continue the interview. She would have stopped it. Then she came down an hour or two later and saw Frank was still talking to him. So she just poked her head in and said, Beverly, and she was married to Al Pacino. She played in the country singer song. Remember Sissy Spacek played the coal miner's daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Patsy Cline. I think, Beverly, whatever his name, played Patsy Cline. She was pretty good at it. She was a good friend of Gail's. And so Gail puts her head in and says, Frank, Beverly's upstairs, implying, you know, he has to go up because she wants to see him. But he didn't go up. Not right away. We talked for another hour or two, and then he put on his new album. We started listening to it, and about one-third through it, I had my eyes closed listening to it, and I opened them, and he was gone. So that's when he went up to see Beverly D'Angelo. You ever heard of her, Beverly D'Angelo? Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
are you guys falling asleep?
Yeah.
Is this Bert? Are we too fucked up here? And are we too bored? What's going on?
No. I've been on mute. My Skype cut off, and I had just called back in. No, it's fine.
Okay.
You see him?
Who's that laughing?
There you go.
Is that Roxy laughing?
No.
Is it Ginny?
Someone else.
Might be Ginny.
Oh, are we? Can you hear us? I'm laughing at my brother's Halloween costume on Facebook. Sorry, Bob.
Yeah, why even listening to us? If you're engaged with Halloween...
Well, because I have a legitimate question for you, actually. I was calling in to ask you something.
Okay, let me...
But I heard you talking about Zappa and all that, so I want you to finish your topic. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let me just finish this part here. I think I found it. He says, blatant flag-waving gets to be a little nauseating. We represent the only true patriotism left. Here's instructions on playing your album. First, you buy it. Second, you don't leave it on the back seat of the car so it melts. Third, take out disc two and play the last. Third, take out disc two and play the last side first. Turn off all the lights and sit in front of the stereo with your head in front of the speaker and turn the volume all the way up. Fourth, the cut lasts, I can't make it a certain number of minutes, 37 seconds. If by 8 minutes you have a headache, burn the album. if you get a headache from the album, burn it. Be careful not to inhale the fumes from the liner notes. Save the ashes because they're used in the removal of warts and athlete. Oh, there he's being the doctor. My theory's confirmed. He says, careful not to inhale the fumes of the liner notes as if they were on fire. Save the ashes because they're used in the removal of warts and athlete's foot. Fifth, if you get through the 12 minutes, 37 seconds, proceed. So someone says, why the mother's invention, explained Frank with popsicle dripping on his mustache. We're here to something them. Them being the non-thinking plastic robot types of Madison Avenue, nonsense poverty programs and all the red, white, and blue rigmarole. You try to get a better version of that. That's pretty good. He's saying these various things. He's being political. Okay, so we're not going to get it perfect, but He's putting down the plastic robots of Madison Avenue and their nonsensical poverty programs and all that red, white, and blue rigmarole. So the artist Lorraine Alderman says, so, mothers and fathers, next time the Beatles, the Stones, or Sonny and Cher come to town, welcome them with open arms. Next to the Mother's Invention, these other groups come on like the Bobbsey Twins. Oh, that's July 15th, 1966. There's the date. 1966. The album hasn't even come out yet, I don't think. It comes out like a week later. Now.
Yeah, but he mentioned often that he considered his music to be a therapy against the environment.
Right. He's a doctor, a new kind of doctor. It says here, we did the way kids dance in L.A. is very advanced socially. It's completely improvised. This is one of the most, and then one of the most serious problems among youngsters on the coast is drugs, Zappa says. I don't use any, and I've never encouraged it. Anyone who takes LSD is taking his mind in his own hands. Okay, we read that. And he says you can get psychedelic effects through dancing and holding your breath. Frank believes that much of what the group is trying to put across on records is explained in the following lyrics. Oh, we did that, the Brain Police. Sorry. Okay, now here's another article. The mothers consider themselves a group of singing social workers. Now, there's your therapy, Roxy. Singing social, like they're out to start a new civilization. Sounds familiar. What do you think of that, Roxy? Well, therapy, there's your therapy, man.
Yes.
They're trying to even reform the welfare office. The mothers consider themselves a group of singing social workers exercising free speech through music. They have found that through music they can speak more freely to reach more people. Then Frank says, we consider ourselves therapeutic workers massaging the brains of people, dancing to our music with the lyrics to our songs. So that's what Susie Creamtree said. We sing songs with feeling like they were done in the late 50s in the El Monte Legion Stadium. Not the commercial noise that's being put out today. He's calling it commercial noise. Like, remember, he says he doesn't listen to the radio. He doesn't know what's going on. So he's actually talking like an old-fashioned composer from the 19th century. Right?
Yeah.
He's actually, like, very straight in the help your neighbor sense. He actually believes society's falling apart, and he's got to get out there and save it and bring it back to the real values of the past. I've never seen him say that about music. It's just commercial noise. So it says, some examples of lyrics from the mother songs are, quote, take your little white plastic boots and melt them down and send them back to the shoe store. Take your little white plastic hat and crumple it up and send it back to the hat store. That's lyrics. They're just basically arguing with the public. There's your conversation, Roxy. We're building up proof.
Yeah,
he's talking.
He's like very serious, and he says, this is our agenda. This is how we're going to save the world. And then he starts with these funny things.
He's talking. His lyrics are fucking just somebody, they're yelling at you. That's his lyrics. Take your little white plastic boots and melt them down and send them back to the shoe store. Take your little white plastic hat and crumple it up and send it back to the hat store. Then he says, we get so tired of playing for these phony people in blue velour sweatshirts and poor boy sweaters. They are trying so hard to be cool and think they are so in. And, of course, they go to the go-go clubs to be discovered, said Frank. He's actually, like, older, right? He's not a teenager. He's an old fucking CIA agent trying to fuck with people. He is in the CIA. The other mothers are Cherokee Jim Black drums, Roy Estrada bass, Ray Collins harmonica singer, Henry Vestine guitar. I think he went on and formed Can't Heat, which I think I said it the same way last week. I think he went on to form Can't Heat. I'm repeating myself. A description of today's world through the eyes of the mothers can be found in the last verse of their song, Watts Riot, which later becomes, you know, Trouble Every Day, I guess. So this is the end of the article with this long quote. "We got to sit around at home and watch this thing begin, but I'll bet there won't be many live to see it really end, because the fire in the street ain't like the fire in the heart. And in the eyes of all these people, don't you know that this could start?" He's actually being a responsible politician here. "On any street, in any town, in any state, if any clown decides that now is the time to fight for what he thinks is right, and if a million more agree, there ain't no great society as it applies to you and me, and that our country isn't free, and that the law refuses to set, and that the law refuses to see if all that you can ever be is a lousy janitor unless your uncle owns a store, you know that five in every four just won't amount to nothing more. They'll watch the rats go around the floor and make up songs about being poor." Well, I actually remember reading that last week. So for those who attended last week, I hope you're not too irritated by me screwing up here. Here's the headline.
You're like McLuhan. Just repeating.
How am I like McLuhan?
It's a pedagogic tool.
What?
Repetition.
I repeat myself. It's depth perception, yes.
Yes, but for pedagogical reasons.
Yes, pedagogical reasons.
We remember.
No ego, no desire to become wealthy, just here for your spiritual nutrition. So these are the articles I've been reading that they put in the paid advertisement. Then they have a headline, "The mothers find a way to bore nearly everyone." At the top it says, "The clean-cut folks don't like us much." Freakout, Son of Guambo, Incredible Light Show, Shrine Exposition Hall. That's where I saw Krishnamurti once. Okay, so I think, well, there's another big ad, October 28, 66. That's the time me and Carolyn started. That's the day me and Carolyn decided to get together, October 29th. So here's an ad. It says, "Vito, Sue, and Godo," that's their kid, these are the dancers, "present a freak out, freak in, freak up, freak down, Halloween costume, mostly paint genitals, must be covered." Oh, look at this. "Vito, Sue, and Godo present a freak out, freak in, freak up, freak down, Halloween, freak down, like hoedown, Halloween costume, mostly paint. Genitals must be covered. Dance at the Hullabaloo Sunday, October 30th, across from the Palladium. And over ID required, light show music by the Daily Flash." Okay, so I Xeroxed that. So I think this is going to be good, this part. In this next ad, October 8th, 28th, there's a lot of text. So it says, "The mothers play dirty." So they've been running around the summer of 66 with their album, pissing people off, right? So in this big one-page advertisement, they have a little block and it says, little square, "Ronnie Heron wants her stash back." Somebody stole her dope and they stick that in the ad. "Ronnie Heron wants her stash back." Then it says, "The mothers play dirty." And they have, "Yes." They're not saying who says it. So it says, read this first. "Many people have been under the impression that the mothers are engaged in the field of entertainment. This is not true. The mothers are striving to communicate with, not specifically entertain, their audience, no matter how small that audience might be." That's like us. He's fucking doing Ionic. He's on a mission from Bob or God or Zeus or Gnosticism or rationalism or the analogical doctrine of proportional communication. They're trying to communicate. They're the first panickers. Remember, everybody's on their iPhone texting now over the last five or so years, panicking to see if they can connect with anybody or panicking that they're not connecting, correct? So they're the first to put out this thing, "We're trying to connect with you." He says, "We have discovered a small but active audience of detractors here in L.A., consisting mainly of imposters who would usurp and corrupt a number of concepts and techniques which we developed, specifically the freakout and the light show Nirvana. These charlatans and their stooges in attendance have attempted to besmirch our sterling reputation. We would like to communicate with this brack, that means like a burp, we would like to communicate with this audience on a higher plane, but unfortunately, this is not where they're at, to use an expression common to this area. Therefore, we reluctantly descend. This is like the Emerald Tablets. Therefore, we reluctantly descend in the interest of higher education, momentarily sacrificing our most treasured principles. We descend to their subterranean milieu, such a Machiavellian compromise, to return logic and patient explanation for their loathsome behavior. Next week, they will say we play dirty. What do you think of that? I bet you nobody knows this. No Zappa historians know that they put ads out like this. This is stuff I found. I had to go through miles of, you know, microfilm looking for something and eventually find something. It says super manager, back
again. I really
again.
Like this anti-advertisement he's making.
Like they're pleading to communicate. Yeah, the ad is supposed to have subliminals and be real slick and know what it's doing. They're just basically using the space to plead for someone to pay attention to them.
I was thinking that it's the same thing Ian does when he says, we are not healing anybody. We don't care if you're dead. We don't want to help.
We're not here to entertain you.
Yeah, it's the same thing. He's doing the same.
This is Ionic. Very good. Very good. You know, this is part of, you know, that person posted on Ion Bob. Bob, you're just trying to hijack Zappa for your own purposes, your measly play dirty purposes. And we can prove, so these guys were doing us.
But Zappa himself said he kidnapped his musicians for his own dirty purposes.
He told them that he'll make them famous, and they all end up starving 2 years later.
Yes, and I was watching some of his musicians. They were commenting, yeah, we thought we were in a jazz band or a rock band, and then we were like, what?
They didn't even, it's like payday. What's this show for? I thought Bob was here to entertain us, but he just keeps yelling at us to fucking entertain him. Who's the entertainer here, the chicken or the egg? Who's doing what? Yeah, you're right. He's hijacked them. They don't even know what kind of music they're supposed to do. I mean, how could you get, if you're just a kid and you want to form a band, you got to fucking adapt to who's going to be in your band. Frank, he just told me, yeah, come on, you're really good. Be in my band. Okay, now play these triplets and mumble. The confidence he had, as somebody was saying, that he didn't, I think his brother was saying this, the confidence he had that if these guys won't do it, I'll get someone else because I'm so good, I can always lead a band.
And it was true.
Are you there?
Yes, it was true.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, we heard that incredible song, Cruising for Burgers. Okay, so what did you say, Roxy? Did you have something to say?
Yes, not at the meta level of the Bolsheviks that are controlling everything, but the people of the street, the socialists, the Marxists, the people on the former Eastern Bloc, they wanted, or they saw Zappa as socialist workers' idol somehow.
Yes.
Because he was blasting anti-bourgeois things like sex. He would praise masturbation and be anti-conventional. And
he fit their profile.
Sort of,
and he always
he must be socialist.
Said, yeah, and he said in interviews he didn't like the socialists. He didn't like anybody. He was always criticizing everybody from a third or fourth position. He was asked to speak at leftist things, and he often, most time, didn't do it. But at the same time, he's criticizing the right wing, too.
Just like in his music, he was Zappa. He was not doing any style, he was Zappa. And also, in his political views, he was Zapatist. He was himself, he was his own party. his own agenda.
Yeah, yeah. And he even started his own party called the Interested Party. So what else? Yeah, that's... it's the other thing. Both the Bolsheviks are not Marxist ideologues. They don't have an ideology. They just have the might to like a mafia gang. Mafia guys aren't right wingers. They might prop up some of that, but they'll prop up anybody that's working on their sneaky level. So the
I'm sorry, Bob, to interrupt, but I just wanted to point out that that was the one of the things that you told me in D.C. that really stuck with me, because you said go to the wiki and look up Bolsheviks, and you'll see that they get very easily confused with the Marxist agenda, and you said that has nothing to do with it, and I did. I looked at it, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. So it's not really what people think it is, even by the word implied in the name, that they're the, you know, the qualification of that group. Yeah, very good.
There's no human element, no chemical body element in power. The power is technological. You just are the guy that's a janitor for the technology that keeps the society going. See, there's no ideology at the janitor level, but you are part of something that can kill people coming in, or you can off other people. So I get people to imagine there's different factions in the Secret Service that are fighting over these goalless positions.
So the Bolsheviks were really in control of the military technologies, and that's where their thing was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they took over what the Rockefellers had. They just took it over. They just killed the Rockefellers and took over the office position, so to speak. Took over the
bureaucracy. Okay, very good. So they hijacked it.
You don't have any access to the bureaucracy. You have no say. All that money goes into the black ops projects and whatever secret stuff. It's so decentralized. There's all kinds of factions in the Pentagon. Because once you get to that level of secrecy, you can rip off a lot of money and have your
right
own going.
And with the Bolsheviks and their militaristic agendas and so on and so forth. Okay, and that's the technology and whatever. So now here's the ION comes as the premier technology of technologies. Yeah. And I mean, I have been thinking a lot about it lately, Bob, and I can see where I remember when you used to say, you know, if you're not on the drops and not doing this, you're not going to make it. And now I'm kind of like, yeah, you're not going to make it. I mean, if you don't have your legs, I do. If you don't have your legs tightly wrapped around IONDEM, I'm not sure you're going to make it, you know? How could you?
Yeah.
I mean, look at what ION's doing. It's incredible.
Right.
So,
right.
I think that, here so comes ION with this whole new level of technology that cannot even be, there's no language to even express what it is fully. There's just...
Yeah.
Things that are being said. And this is what the Bolsheviks now and others at different levels are having to react to, but they're quote-unquote not sure what it is. They just know they're in an upset.
Yeah, they don't know what it is.
Very good.
They've made some accusations and threatening moves on us, but they never get anywhere for some reason.
Right. Well. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Okay.
I think they don't know how much we know, so that makes them nervous. Because with ION, we can know everything about anything that's happening. So, how are you going to? You would have to think. Well, what do they know on us? You know. I think it helps.
Right. Like.
I was going to say it helps that JW is, you know, so wealthy. They have to be a bit nervous about that. Now, who are JW's friends?
Very good. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, let me do this. So this one pager is pretty incredible. So they're making a case for something here. I'll just read what this ad says, the mothers are saying. And it starts off, Mothers of Invention Art Review, and it says Ziedler still eats it. Ziedler, Z-E-I-D-L-E-R, still eats it. So I don't know who Ziedler is at this point. It There's a critical analysis of Baron von Lockway's latest calendar, see page 11. So maybe it's somebody who criticized the mothers. So it's forward. As an artist, or is he a drawer? I don't know which it is. As an artist, or is he a drawer, Ziedler and Ziedler's calendar boy, I guess that's Baron von Lockway, would do well to change his name to Jimmy Cretton, trundle his crayons, sandals, beatnik bongos, and toilet paper off to Burbank, there to seek gainful employment as a doodling robot in the Disney factory. Cop out for Disney? Cop out for Ziedler? What's the difference? It's the bread that counts, right, little fella? Hopefully using this review as a letter of recommendation. So they're saying, use this anti-Ziedler stuff. Ziedler could use it to get a gig at Disney. And he says, you'll be happy in Burbank. They see things your way there. Then he says, analysis. Outside of a certain blandness which pervades all of Calendar Boy's ingenious attempts to serve the muse, the trained observer might note, in this, his most recent turd, myriad and vibrant examples of Lockway Ziedler's adolescent, if not totally subliminal, corporate humor gestalt. Adolescent corporate humor gestalt. For instance, some might perceive the toilet symbolism here as an arcane reference to the early Lenny Bruce Ziedler FM commercials on KBCA. Remember, and it says, Don't pee on those suits. You're wetting on those suits. Get out of here. That's some kind of commercial. Except for the fact that Lenny was, shall we say, on a slightly different level. Lockway Ziedler's apparent coprophilia, look that one up, little fella, tends to lose a little in the translation. Quote, a more accurate description of said feeling is bowel movement. So this is ranting on about this guy. This is what the ad is made up of. No biographers ever pointed this out. They didn't know about them. So they're going on about Calendar Boy's infantile concern for things between his legs appears once more in this fluid stanza. Quote, I can do nothing but become limp over a poor attempt to badmouth. End of quote. Wherein he secretly attempts to advise the reader not to offer, but to give him head. Wherein he secretly attempts to advise the reader not to offer, to give him head. He secretly attempts to advise the reader not to give him head. Because, one, it is nasty, in brackets, bad mouth. Number two, it is hard for him to maintain an erection. This is the end. If in reality it is true, now, reading Bobby Zappa's book, Frank and Bobby had to deal with attackers every now and then, and he put up a good fight. It's Frank continuing his fight with assholes around him. You know, like he'll take his gloves off immediately. He has to. So he's saying, if in reality it is true that Calendar Boy's impotence, in big capital letters, extends beyond his art to his thing, in quotes, calling his penis his thing, the mother's invention respectfully advised Reichian therapy and total abstention from beach blanket bingo. Yes, the mother's invention can flush it. Better hold your breath, fellas, and watch out for those blind brown fish. That's lumps of shit, right? Mother's Invention Literary Review. Mother's Mourn McGregor's Copo. Sean McGregor, so they're doing an art review. They go after Ziedler and criticize his penis. And then they go after a literary guy named Sean McGregor. Sean McGregor, as we learned from his recent writing attempt in the L.A. Free Press, column, October 21st, 66, Tinsel City, has a great deal of trouble getting his point across. It's not merely his technical incompetence that offends, in brackets, oh well, he gets away with it in his scripts for Bonanza and Perry Mason. So they're criticizing a guy who writes for Bonanza. That's right up your alley, Roxy.
Yeah.
He writes scripts, so these are Hollywood writers. What?
Rear view mirror.
Yeah. Oh, well, he gets away with it in his scripts for... See, Frank knows is being given information. He knows who's who. In his scripts for Bonanza and Perry Mason, it is not merely his technical competence that offends, so much as the element of prostitution implied by facts we have recently uncovered is widely rumored and readily evident from his Tinsel City effort that Sean McGregor, famed and esteemed, that Sean McGregor, famed and esteemed Sean McGregor, hates Herb Cohen's guts. Herb Cohen's Frank's manager. So they're saying that McGregor's after Herbie Cohen. Big deal. Then they say Sean McGregor, as some of you might already know, is in the employ of none other than Mr. Showbiz himself, Pat Morgan, widely famed promoter of such airsets blockbusters as The Freak In and The Freak Off. I guess that's opposite of Frank's Freak Out, who also hates Herbert Cohen's guts, it seems. Evidently, on behalf of his employer, Sean McGregor took it upon himself to subvert a quasi-legitimate vehicle, his little column, in order to hurl a few cardboard thunderbolts at a quiet and peace-loving group of local lads whose only offense was having Herb Cohen for a manager. So he's calling the mother's invention a quiet and peace-loving group of local lads whose only offense was having Herb Cohen as a manager, in brackets. And Herbie's only offense was blasting Mr. Morgan in the mouth when the top of his head, sorry, and Herbie's only offense was blasting Mr. Morgan in the mouth with the top of his head when he was attacked by Morgan on Sunset Boulevard in front of the Hollywood Reporter office and innumerable witnesses. This sounds like me and our former distributor yelling at each other. The adventure continues with Herbie filing charges of assault and battery against the aggressive Texas faker. Why doesn't he call his shows fake-offs, who in a move of massive retaliation summons to his side the fearsome and stupefying intellect of his top minister of propaganda, stooge Sean McGregor. Let's hear it for him, kids, to instruct him. Am I imagining any of this? Oh, there's Frank throwing in his doubt. We doubt this. Remember that? He starts doubting anything that he's doing. So to instruct him, in brackets, am I imagining any of this? To instruct him to get Cohen Boy. You know I can't write, or I'd do it myself, says, I guess, McGregor. Maybe someday you'll need a good deal on a used car. Then I can help you. But right now I need you to type this stuff up for me. So, okay, so the Minister of Propaganda, McGregor, to instruct him. Okay, who's instructing who? I guess this Texas faker guy, Morgan, in a move of massive retaliation, summons to his side McGregor to instruct him. So this is what Pat Morgan says to McGregor. Get Cohen, boy. You know I can't write, or I do it myself, says Pat Morgan. Maybe someday you'll need a good deal on a used car. Then I can help you, but right now I need you to type this stuff up for me. Almost immediately, Sean McGregor went to work. Copping out was nothing new to him, nor prostitution. In brackets, these two terms are not necessarily synonymous. Remembering his boss's instructions about greasing little Gary Ferguson, that's Morgan's pride and joy act. Yes, he's a manager, too. A vaudeville anachronism. Quote, gee, look at how little he is. And he's up there fixing the microphone by himself and singing into it. Oh, no, make him sing High Heel Sneakers again. Sean McGregor, where is this? Sean McGregor. Sean McGregor said about his business of doing in super manager, if little Gary Ferguson's mother ever found out how Morgan really talks about her son, she'd hit him in the mouth with her head, too. She'd hit him in the mouth with her head. For what seemed an eternity, Sean McGregor stooged his way through the Tinsel City column, finally finishing in a pool of rank perspiration from which he derived his opening lines about victoriously streaming armpits, quote. He rushed to the side of his master for approval, as he had done so many times before with TV producers, only to find the sinister Texas freak merchant on the telephone craftily sucking Vito. Oh, now we're bringing in Vito. And in brackets, we'll call you King Carl, maybe get you a little crown or something or a robe. Okay, sucking Vito into his grandiose scheme to fake off the world. So here's a problem between Vito and Frank, it seems. Vito got sucked into it. And Carl would be Carl Franzoni, Vito's buddy. Sean McGregor stood by, his soiled little paper in one hand, listening intently as the big man continued his telephonic hype. Quote, we'll put a bunch of ads in the free press where a whole entire entourage of dancers and freakers can see it and get turned on by it. And then we'll go to a big radio station that all the kids really dig, like KRLA, and we'll get them in on it, and we'll all make some bread. I know you could use a little extra with Halloween coming up. Now, there is this anachrony. With Halloween coming up and all and later Christmas. No, I know you could use a little extra with Halloween coming up and all, and later Christmas has a lot of expenses, and you'll be wanting to get a little something for the missus and your baby. How's about it? So all that, he's saying that Vito, the great dancer, got sucked into Pat Morgan's scene, and then Frank ends saying, somehow it worked. So if I read it right, Frank and them are pissed because one of their friends got sucked into Pat Morgan. So this is all, this is an ad. That's amazing.
Bob, did you mention earlier that some guy said that Frank was the ad guy trying to infiltrate music, or was that what the guy thought?
Yeah, that's Ralph Gleason up in San Francisco, famous jazz critic. When he saw The Mother's Invention the first time or two, he said these are just a bunch of old guys who worked in advertising companies who are trying to pretend they're young. And rip off
Frank
the
was using,
market.
Yeah, but Frank was using his ad business, but not what you would think of the ad. He was just trying to get
attention.
Well,
he worked in advertising, made greeting cards, but then he made a couple of ads. They're pretty amazing. They're odd. He did one for Hagstrom Guitars and for some other company. So he made he had his own little sub-ad company, and he made a couple of ads, but I don't think he did much of that. But he knew, he understood marketing, and he's basically saying, man, this is getting decentralized, and we just act like crazy nuts. We'll get an audience because a lot of interesting, freaky people out there who are bored of the norm. And if we act really abnormal, like this ad, I mean, it's incredible. It's a lot of typing and underlining, and it's just them having an argument in public. As a joke. So if you go back to the opening paragraph, it makes sense once you read all the details. It says, many people have been under the impression that their mothers are engaged in the field of entertainment. This is not true. Their mothers are striving to communicate with, not specifically to entertain, but to communicate with their audience, no matter how small that audience might be. We have discovered a small but active... What?
It was not only communication, but they were really into transforming the audience.
Right. They had the newest educational techniques. They had me as their hidden weapon. So we have discovered it. Now, you guys might want to say, Bob, did you write this yourself? You could.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah. How come I have
writing the lyrics?
These are so these are so obscure, these articles. How come I have them? Okay, it says, I mean, Dave Wall in his biography mentioned in passing Frank having a few statements in the LA Free Press, but, man, you could make a lot of headway just showing this stuff. It's pretty unique. So they go, we have discovered a small but active audience of detractors, so that would be Sean McGregor here in L.A., consisting mainly of imposters who would usurp and corrupt a number of concepts and techniques which we developed. That means that's the freak off and the freak in. And he says, specifically, the freakout and what they designed is the freakout and the light show Nirvana. These charlatans and their stooges in attendance have attempted to besmirch our sterling reputation. We would like to communicate with this audience on a higher plane, but unfortunately, this is not where they're at. to use an expression common to this area, to talk like aliens, common to this LA area. Therefore, we reluctantly descend in the interest of higher education, momentarily sacrificing our most treasured principles. We descend to the subterranean milieu, such a Machiavellian compromise, to return logic and patient explanation, that's what I do, patient explanation, for their loathsome behavior. Next week, they will say we play dirty. So, that's pretty amazing. Great fun reading that. I hope somebody was entertained. Hope we haven't upset anybody.
I really like the ad.
Yeah, what an incredible. You see how it's laid out? It's like, it's cheap. It's just typed up and underlined and capital letters here and there. It's semi-amateurish. But it's grammatically correct. That's pretty good.
It was really creating all types of anti-environment.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so we heard him talk about brain extending and all that, and that's what Susie Cream Cheese wrote in her letter. So, yes, we could say that Frank wrote her letter. I'm just organizing my papers. So we're ready to go to the next part, the next exciting development. Maybe I could put on a little music for a minute. Okay?
Yes. Okay. I'll go get something to eat and
yes.
In the
take a break.
Okay?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see on the chat column they're asking questions. Bob, did you write this? I mean, they're asking questions. They're asking questions before I get to the point of telling them. Well, it's funny. They got here. Mateo, Halloween, Matean e-commerce blog. Oh, yeah. Mateo says we are nearing the 2,100-hour mark for payday. That converts to 12 and a half weeks. We've been on the air the last couple of years for a total of 12 and a half weeks, 24/7. Then Mateo, I must have made an accusation. He says, wasn't me, Bob, LOL. And then Frank Bart.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry. What? Go ahead. Speaking of being on the radio that long. Oh.
Yeah, relax. Just submit it. Find out what planet you're on. Okay, Frank Barden. He says, Iboga bark. Eliza, the GTOs made their own outfits. Yes, they're talking about the freak part. Gene says, Zappa was the first welfare reform effort. Gene says, Eliza, you are a rising Zappatist in action. Robert says, did Frank eat seeds, Bob? No, I don't know. Gene, perfect. Thanks, Ginny. I've got some musical and military cousins with whom I'm going to share this show. Perfect subject to include. Gene says, makes so much sense. Quote, those guys will work for anybody, talking about the Bushes. And then she says, the three rival factions for world power. She lays out a beater statement, and beater type of statement. Eliza says, China changed their law from having only one child to now allowing two children per family. Eliza says, Gene, I've always advocated that if people had a daily massage, they wouldn't be panicking or running amok. So Frank Zappa / Pamela Zarubica knew what they were talking about. Did I tell you that Pamela Zarubica went on, she lives in London and she's a psychic. Became a psychic person, gives readings or something. Cheryl in Vermont says, good morning all. Ginny, Bernie has anger management issues according to his past staff. So yeah, I guess Cheryl knows Bernie. He's from Vermont. Then she gives a link to read about that. Then Gene says, Bob, did you write this? 18 says, ever ready. Bob, ever ready bunny battery. Amazing. He's calling me an ever ready bunny battery. Ginny, thanks, Gene. I wasn't aware of that post. I will check it out. Then Cheryl posts the Frank Zappa lost interview, the presidential election. Okay. I got to play some music. Do you have anything to say while I look for some music?
No, other than like you can see that. You hear me, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Frank was very clever. Very clever in his presentation when he was either in the written, like in the ads, as well as when he was in a basic interview. It's amazing.
Right.
All this is sharing. And did you say earlier that someone was going to present, do an autobiography? Because I think you said earlier that there are some Zappa autobiographies that are going to present Frank's life. Or did I misunderstand?
Oh, yes. Gail and, well, it was Gail, but Ahmet and the rest of them are going through Zappa's vaults and taking out all these unseen interviews that Frank did for all different kinds of media, different opportunities. And they're going to make a long documentary by a famous documentarian where Frank explains himself. It's like they're saying it's just going to be Frank talking.
Frank.
Up with all this footage that they have that no one's seen, he's going to explain his life. Because apparently, I guess, he talked a lot about it to different people at different times, at different levels. That's what I was referring to.
Okay, so it's going to be a video autobiography.
Yeah, or a film. It's a major movie. Major something.
Be interesting.
Bob, it's Ginny again.
Yes.
Gene posted from Ion and Bob the Peter Beaver Three Rival Factions. This is written by Dr. Beter. It's a summary of his 80 tape audio letter, and in it he says there are three factions, and then it goes down to talk about the new Kremlin rulers, and you didn't mention them. Do they need any attention to complete our conversation?
No, that's where Gorbachev comes from. They're the native patriots who were forced to work with the Bolsheviks at the Russian Revolution. But eventually, Khrushchev was one of their guys. And then they knocked out Khrushchev and put Brezhnev, the Bolshevik, back in. And then when the Bolsheviks got really weak in Moscow and got kicked out of Moscow, that's when Gorbachev got in the middle 80s. So that's the native, patriotic group. There's the Rockefellers, the Bolsheviks, the Zionists, and then the Russian patriots. So there's four groups, really.
Okay, and it says in here about the satanic Bolsheviks that dominate the United States government, do everything in their power to paint Russia as an enemy worth hating. So is this playing out now with Putin?
Yeah, Putin is in there. He comes out of the KGB. It's hard to tell what the KGB are. Are they their own separate autonomous group, or are they mixed up in the middle of all of them? It's pretty hard. Now, you look at what happened to America. Just take the general mood from the last 30 years. Is there anybody who can say that America didn't become a bummed-out place in general?
Not from the demand for prescription drugs, no. I mean, everybody's on some kind of a mood killer, right?
Right. So it's a pretty bad situation, and it wasn't like that in the 60s, 70s, but this is what Beter predicted the Bolsheviks would bring. They're actually turning America into old, depressing Soviet Union.
And this is the sense that the Americans have, which is why they're scrambling to try to relocate themselves according to some kind of a presidential candidate or whatever. But it's not working, and really all they can do for themselves really is tap into Iondom. But I think Ion's in charge of who's actually able to get access.
Right.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. So... we must play a Zappa break. We need a break here.
Thank you.
Roxy, are you back? Okay, I wanted to tell you that. No, I wanted to tell you this a little while ago. Bieder always said that Germany or West Germany was heavily Bolshevik-controlled because a lot of the people who supported the Bolsheviks in 1917 were the people around turning taxes and that German oligarchy. And you were telling me that the radicals in Berlin say, you know, the global arms market is run out of Germany. You know, remember you telling me that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a leftover of the Bolshevik domination in that area.
Yeah, there was a cartoon lately, and they showed Germany exports guns and imports refugees.
Right. And they do it, like, Merkel, you know, is sabotaging her own career with this stupid stuff she does because she doesn't have any control, and the Bolsheviks do what they want to do. You know, if they want to flood Germany with a bunch of refugees or gangs, they'll do it. Nobody can stop them.
Yeah.
Because they got a gun in everybody's head.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, that's something nobody really understand what's behind that.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, yeah, who's really behind that? Because
well, that's why you have to go back.
Very expensive.
Very expensive back when you
for
each
person to come here.
Say
so
it again.
Where are all these?
What's that?
It's very expensive for people to come to Europe.
To get there. Yeah.
And they say, how do these people get the money to come?
Right.
Who's behind that? And yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the old Rockefeller cartel that has a power base in Germany. So if they get the upper hand, the Bolsheviks just open the floodgates and flood Berlin with refugees and gangs. That's part of the fighting between the factions. And because they are not controlled by national bureaucracies, they can just, dominate and make things happen. They can just make things happen because the local bureaucracies can't stop it. So if you're looking at it and say, why is Merkel doing this? Well, you've got to change your view of it, that she's not in charge. And back when you could take over, back in the 70s, early 80s, that's the last chemical body history of people getting bureaucratic power, and that's why you read Bieder to find out who got it, and then once they had it, no one could topple them. But they're behind the scenes. They're working on irrelevant issues. It's keeping their arms trades going, their dope business, and their refugee business. So it just inconveniences the average American or average German. But they're not a
common
thing. Yes.
So Bob, is that why the downed Russian jetliner might be a significant?
Yes.
Because of what you were just
saying? Most of these crashes are yeah. Part of the battle.
Yeah.
I didn't even hear this. So a liner crashed. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. In Egypt.
Yes.
And how many people were?
What was it, 240 or 270?
Yes, it's a real drag because yeah, I think about that all the time. Look at all the flights that are going on 24/7, and there's hardly ever a crash. A friend of mine used to say it's safer to be on an airplane than to be on a highway. So when a crash happens, it's a major, some kind of major tetrad management something going on. You know what I mean? Because nobody crashes.
So we may or may not find out that there were important people on that plane or significant people.
There are a couple of, maybe I broadcast them, of Ion talking to me about the when the whole Polish government was wiped out.
Yes.
Ion talks about, and only will talk about it as, well, you don't want to get involved with those people over there, and it's pretty bleak, and the guys who are doing this murdering are fighting over a parallel world depot, something like that. And So Ion basically talked about that the people in charge of these areas, you have no clue of. He's not going to know about them. And, you know, what's really good at showing that is the TV show 24. They show the secret battle pretty good. At least in the later seasons. Okay, so I want to do another Zappa interview. So let's make sure there's not too much noise. I'm just going to mute everybody for a moment just to read some of this.
All participants are now muted.
This is an interview done in March 1967 by Walter Bowert. He was running the East Village Other. It was his paper. And Zappa was brought in, and so Walter interviews Zappa. So this is pretty interesting. So it says at the top, Frank Zappa is the leader of a freak rock group, the Mothers of Invention, which originated on the West Coast. An article on Zappa and the Mothers recently appeared in the January 15 issue of the World Journal Tribune Sunday magazine. So it starts off with Zappa saying, if the kids who are destined to take over the country could somehow acquire the sense of responsibility. In other words, from time to time, there's lots of talk about revolution. Quote, we're going to revolt, man. We're revolting, unquote. They could tell everybody where it's at, but they won't. Kids today, as they stand, have the potential to do a really big number. They could own the fucking...